This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 477, brought to you by Scrib.com and iFanboy listeners just like you. She's a rebel, she's a saint, she's a salt of the earth, and she's dangerous. She's a rebel, vigilante, missing link on the brink of destruction. From Chicago to Toronto, she's the one that they call, oh, what's her name? She's a symbol of resistance, and she's holding on my heart like a... Hello and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 477. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and that's my co-host, John Flanagan, apparently.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me? Here I am, years I'm telling people, hey, you spell his name right, and you do that. I get that all the time on work emails, by the way. Like, I'll send something out in the right bag, like, hey, John, and I start checking. I'm like, you're not even reading it.
Sorry. I don't know how that happened.
Apparently you slept too much there, champ.
Too much sleep will make me tired. Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
we are a fanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a stack of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books, talk about some other stuff, maybe some listener mail. We try to have fun for you and for us.
Try.
We try. You know? We'll try our best. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll probably be some spoilers, so exercise some caution. That's your warning. Josh.
Yeah.
Not John, but Josh had the pick of the week.
Thank God, because you know what? That guy could not vamp like I can. pick of the week this week is Invisible Republic number one from Gabriel Hardman, Karina Becko, and colorist Jordan Boyd. You know, the Becko-Hardman grouping, marriage creative consulting firm. I don't know that that's what they call it. They do interesting work, and this was their first issue of a new Image series. And it's funny because... You know, they've been doing a bunch of stuff for a while, but Gabe didn't come back to comics. He came back to comics with a story that he and Karina did at Image, and then he went on and did all sorts of other things, Heathentown. And now they're back at Image doing what Image does, which is new series. Just endless new series.
That's what we do. It's our business.
3, 4, 5. Would you like a new series? Well, I was hoping you had something. If you want something old, I got The Walking Dead. Other than that, I'm going to need to give you a new series.
Yeah. In fact, I went in for a meeting there once, and would you like a new series?
Would you care for a new series? Here's how it works. You give us a new series, and we give everyone else a new series. I will tell you that this I didn't finish it and immediately think, oh, there's your pick of the week. Mm-hmm. I read it, and it was one of those things that throws you directly into the story. It's going on. There's not a ton of, this is where we are. This is what's happening. It's camera on. They're already going, and it's a very... I don't know what the setup is. There is a very different world, somewhat related to ours. And at the end of it, I was really interested.
It felt very tonally similar to their Planet of the Apes stories.
Yes, definitely, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. And then so after I finished all my books and I sort of looked back and I was like, well, what do I most enjoy? What am I most hungry to see the next part of? And it's this. I want to know... I want the spotlight to be pulled back to see more of this world, because by the end of it, I was like, I don't know what this is. That's really interesting because it seems like there's a lot of really big things happening in there, but it's being told in such a way that is really subtle. And I was impressed by that. I also really like word balloons that don't have outlines. That's a thing.
Well, these have very thick outlines.
I think that's the flashback part.
Okay.
Then the rest of it doesn't. I think Gabe letters this himself. You know, I just like it's got the whole thing has that sort of brownish color palette, and it's sort of a post-apocalyptic sort of something. But for, oh, here's 2843. So it's pretty far, but you know the world's kind of grim and things are tough. Half-starved fish on the moon. Like this is just a ton. Like you know that they built all this world, and then they're showing us these little parts of it, and eventually this is going to come together to be a story.
Right. So the present day stuff is all about the fall of the government. Mm-hmm. They keep referencing the fall of the Mallory regime.
Yeah.
And we're following a reporter who's trying to interview people about the fall of the regime. Where were you when the regime fell? No one wants to talk about it. And he discovers a pile of paper being used as kindling. And what he discovers in the paper is a memoir from the from a woman, and I don't know if you want to spoil this twist.
I don't.
Because it's I hope people pick it up. He finds a memoir that becomes very important to discovering the truth behind the regime that had just fallen. And so we see the flashbacks as he reads the memoir, and we see what's happening. And then in the present day, as he's freaking out over the story he's got in his hands, which is the secret of this ruling family. And it was really fun. I really like – I mean, you're right. It's hard to sort of pin down where this – it's Avalon in the Olis system. It's a sci-fi book, so it's not taking place on Earth or anywhere we recognize as Earth. But you recognize the people. You recognize the struggles. This could have been, you know, taking place in the Dark Ages, people trying to scrounge for food. And it's all very familiar, even if it's in a fantastical sci-fi setting. But it's also a very grounded sci-fi setting. And
that's what I like.
Yeah.
And like, that's the thing that I've really been gravitating towards. Is that hard sci-fi? Is that what you call it? Or is that the opposite? I don't remember. Hard sci-fi is porno, right? No. I like science fiction that is grounded in reality. As a big Star Wars fan, I'd like to say.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but it's true. Like, if I'm reading something now, I really like stuff that is, even if it's far-flung in the future, it's all sort of feels real. Mm-hmm. And there's not supernatural stuff, etc. And it was exactly the kind of thing I was in the mood for. It, you know, like, it reminds me very much of sort of the tone of Lazarus or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Very
I'm
great.
Really into that right now. So when I read this, and we're going to talk about this later, but when you contrast it with the other number one from Image this week, there may be more, Chrononauts from Mark Miller and Sean Murphy, that was a very different kind of book. Mm-hmm. Science fiction book, but a totally different kind of... In the beginning, I was like, you know, this isn't far off from Trade Negotiations. which in the past I would have been like, oh, let's stay. You know what? I was kind of like, you know what? If Gabe and Karina want to do Trade Negotiations, I'm gonna sit through that. I'm gonna go through that because they you know they've proven themselves with it. And I just like that there's a very easy approach to storytelling where it's nothing's getting rammed down the throats, and you know the moments are gonna come, but we're gonna live in here for a little while. And if you know this takes a little bit of you kind of have to trust the storytellers, and if you don't know to do that, then it may not have the same. Effect on you, mm-hmm. But I thought it was a really good opening chapter, and I wanna see where it goes from there.
It is a really nice companion book to Lazarus. It is. Mm-hmm. The more I look at it, Gabe's art style is already very similar to Michael Lark's art style, so that helps. And the feeling that the color palette's similar, sort of the browns and muted colors. Those will be fun to read together.
Yeah, and even the cover. I mean, like,
it feels like an old sci-fi book.
Well, I was going to say, like, what you're looking at there, there's big spaceships flying all over the place. There's blood, like, but it's a really subtle cover. This is not a scream at you cover. There's no bright colors. There's no, you know, it's largely black. Even the blood red is sort of muted, mm-hmm. You know, in a way, you know, with everything sort of screaming to get my attention, I appreciate that. And, it doesn't hurt. I absolutely love the way he draws. I just, you know, like he's one of my favorite artists. I just like his approach to storytelling very much, and I really get into that. So you know, I'm a fan, I suppose, which is definitely making me biased. But you know, if you were to say what's the next issue that you were going to read next week, I want to read the next issue of this.
Which direction is the action go in this book?
The action goes left to right, and the important things are put in front.
Okay.
Just that's the rule.
Just making sure.
There's bits at the end. They're gonna. Apparently, you can send them pictures of your pets. or talk about your pets. They like pets, or they're going to put pictures of their pets.
Something with pets.
It's funny because those kids love animals. There's an essay in the back. There's a, you know, Gabe actually says at the end of, he's like, you know, you can send me letters about the book or whatever, but just want to talk process. That's cool. I would like that, which I love. So he puts the next page is a process page. You see the script. You see the breakdowns, which he says are terrible. You see, you know, the scan and then the color, and you see, you know, like they got Gabe talking about it. They got Karina talking about it. They have Jordan, the colorist, talking about it. I mean, I'm guessing this is probably a bit of an enthusiast sort of book.
Yeah. I think anyone who likes sci-fi, anyone who likes Lazarus, those kind of things should check it out. I think it's a really solid start. And it looks like there's going to be a little bit of mystery, a little bit of politics, a little bit of action. I mean, there's a big old fight scene in this. So you think it's just a lot of people standing around talking about trade negotiations for the whole issue. This is a big old brawl in the middle.
You don't see it coming. You're like, these guys are – oh, no. Oh, he's very capable at fighting and killing, it seems.
Well, okay. You do if you flip through the book before you had read it. But
I didn't. I didn't know anything about it. I mean, my thing with comics these days is partly out of necessity, but partly because I just want to retain something. I don't want to know anything about them. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to look at it if I don't know what it is and figure out whether I want to read it or not. But I don't know what's coming. I don't read interviews about it. I don't read the solicit. I just, you know, I want to go into it fresh because you don't get to do that about anything. So, yeah.
Very good.
It was a good book.
The Private Eye number 10 this week. This was the final issue of the 10-part story from Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin, Munsa Vicente. This is the Panel Syndicate's initial launch book that we were all over at the time, though. I believe you are no longer reading it, right, Josh?
I fell off, and then I'm behind. I'm going to read it. I just haven't. You've heard this story before with me. Like, I fell a little behind. I'll get to it. Like, I'm finishing up Hitman now. It's only been a decade or so.
Well, it's funny because there's like these 10 issues are probably 3 a year. It's hard to keep up with that, I realize. But
it's it's not that. It's because they fall outside of my routine. We've discussed this. Mm-hmm. Like, I have my comics that I grab, sort of, I do it all at one time. And if it doesn't happen there, then I just don't make time for it.
Well, this was a great final issue.
I'm very busy. I'm good with people.
There's a lot of fantastic big old panels in this one. I really, for me, this issue is all about Marcos Martin and Munsa Vicente's art. The big climax pretty much happened in the last issue. This was somewhat of a wrap-up, although there was a big event that happened in it. We also time jump at the end to a little bit.
Yeah, I'm gonna hold, because I really am going to read this, and I'm going to read it soon. I'm going to load it all. I'm traveling at the end of the month. I'm going to load it all up and just sort of read it.
There's a couple of giant full-page panels here where you just sort of marvel at how talented Marcos Martin is. There's a great shot of the CNN helicopter flying through LA, and it's canted angle, and you can see way down the street, and you're just like, Jesus, man. Like, this guy is crazy good. And there's another shot of a giant rocket crashing into a building, which is just wonderful. This was a great-looking book, and I read this issue. Normally, I read them on my iPad, but this one came in during the day while I was working, so I got it on my desktop with my big work monitor, and I loaded it full screen, and it just looks gorgeous like that. They really did a good job of using their medium, the widescreen that's meant for monitors and for tablets, and really.
I would say they were like completely, you know, working with that medium. Mm-hmm. Like if they're not going to print it, if they're not going to, you know, whatever, they completely, you know, dived full force into that.
But I'm going to miss Gramps.
Well, yeah, he's. I think about that character all the time.
I'm really going to miss Gramps. He's such a great character.
I've tried to describe it to other people. You know, like there's this character, which is really hard when they have no context.
Right.
Like, he's like a person now, but
old.
Old, but he's got tattoos all over, and he was kind of like a millennial punk rock. I don't know what he was. I don't know. I don't even know what you call those people. But I'm not using the H word. That's what I know.
But good stuff. Really great. And at the end of the issue, there's a it did end well. At the end of the issue, there's a essay from Brian saying that he and Marcos Martin will be teaming up for another book through Panel Syndicates.
Great. That's awesome. I related to this is that the other day I was like, okay, I'm going to get all of those issues of War Stories because I feel bad about this. And then I saw there was like 6 of them that I'm behind on. I thought, oh, this is going to be a treat.
But I told you can skip the first 3.
I don't want to do that.
All right.
This is, I've fully come, like, he's my favorite writer in comics.
I get that, but the first 3 were probably the weakest of his war stories.
I mean, I'm not going to read Crossed.
No. Got some lines.
Come on.
But this was great. Brad K. Vaughan looks at the world in a way that's really entertaining and fun. And mm-hmm. I'm glad they say this is it for the characters. I'm glad I don't want them to come back, even though I love the world. I like that it's a thing that happened and we move on. You know, that's such a uncommon thing for comics to let things go. But hopefully they do let this go and just let this story stand on its own.
So I alluded to this before. Chrononauts number one from Mark Miller and Sean Gordon Murphy. Mm-hmm. Colors by Matt Hollingsworth, and of course, letters by Chris Eliopoulos. This is the first issue of a very high concept, rollicking, sort of adventure-y sci-fi kind of thing. And I'm going to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
I got as far as the 6th and 7th page, mm-hmm. and I just thought, why doesn't Sean Murphy just do a Gettysburg book? Because I wasn't thinking about anything after that. I was like, oh, look, there's Colonel Stewart, and there's Robert Lee. That's nice. And then I was looking at the picket, because picket's charge, uh-huh. and I was like, that guy wouldn't be in the tree. That's ridiculous. But I want to see that. I love the concept of this book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, if it was just we're going to put a satellite and watch things happen in the past as they occur in real time, mm-hmm. quote unquote, I didn't so much like the characters or the sort of execution of that story. Like I don't know that I'm supposed to.
They're bros in space. And
yeah, I think that's it.
That's where the fun is going to come for me. I loved this issue. The fun is going to come. Well, one of them is less of obnoxious than the other one.
I know, but the other one is so obnoxious that it really, I was like, okay, this is stretching my, it's a little of the old Mark Miller feeling.
He skirted the edge of the line there, but I think hopefully what you get from the story is that guy's learning to be less obnoxious as he's trapped in the past.
And I totally can see this as, like, you know, it exists in a time and a place for, you know, an audience who's used to sort of different things and you know, or has different sensibilities. It's not necessarily bad. I was just like, oh, I need him to be quiet.
Well, I mean, this book,
and he got shot with an arrow, so hey.
This book was sold as a film, and you can very easily see this as, like, sort of Owen Wilson, Luke Wilson, Vince Vaughn vehicle. I mean, it's kind of what it is. It's like two young, handsome guys time traveling, and one of them is motor mouth obnoxious guy. So
I'm sorry. Do they make movies where Channing Tatum isn't one of the leads?
Well, that's what I was thinking too. Like, if you want, you know, Channing Tatum, Jonah Hill type buddy comedy in space.
I just know that if it's a movie, then it's probably going to have Channing Tatum in it.
And apparently Tommy Lee Jones as the security agent guard.
I did see that.
He's a favorite amongst comic artists for authority figures.
Well, I need a grim, hard face. Oh, good.
This was fun. As we said, this is about two guys who develop time travel technology. First, it's a satellite that can record images, so they send it through space, and everybody at home's watching Gettysburg happen on their TVs. And I loved that sequence where everyone, it's sort of like watching the moon landings, you know, that everyone's freaking out on their couch. And then a year and a half later, they develop suits to send themselves through time, and it all goes haywire, of course, as they jump through the time hoop thing. And I liked that. I liked the ex-wife stuff. I liked, you know, that one guy goes to the wrong place. The other guy jumps in to save him. Even though he was obnoxious and kind of a dick, he says, nope, I got to go save my buddy. And ends up in the middle of a battlefield and gets an arrow in him. And the art, I mean, that shot of the dude landing in the middle of the battle and all the horses charging at him, it was fantastic.
I also thought that from a structure standpoint, Mark Miller showed a lot of, I mean, obviously, like, he's good at this, but he showed a lot of prowess in sort of just saying, here it goes. Mm-hmm. Like, he just threw us over the cliff right away.
Right.
Like, he gave you your setup for a little while. And, like, the moment that Quinn, rain of fire, the moment that Quinn goes through the, you know, and they have a problem, like, it's super fast. Like, it's not obvious that anything went wrong other than the sort of mustachy, you know, science guy was like, shit, you know, like, I was like, wait, what did I miss something? What happened? Like, I don't even understand. And then, you know, it went really fast from there. You notice, like, the old lady robbing the black guy?
Yes.
That's delightfully subversive.
It's funny. I liked this book. I thought it was fun. I did notice it sort of skirted towards some of Miller's old tone, but I thought it held together pretty well.
Yes.
The characters are who they are, but that's sort of, for me, part of the fun. And then I like these sort of well-thought-out time travel stories.
Yeah.
The satellite through space recording events, I was like, well, fuck, that's an awesome idea.
Yeah. I know. It really was an amazing idea. And Sean Murphy draws a heck of a car, jet, Civil War battlefield. Yeah, he does. Well, if I had any criticism of him is that one dude with the sideburns and the chin, a lot of his guys look like that.
Yeah, well, that's his face.
But, and that's fine. Everybody's got like a version of their face, and everybody has one. But yeah, he did some really nice work in here. The guy is not afraid to build up a setting. You know,
and I assume this is going to go about 6 issues.
Yeah,
which is what Miller's stuff tends to go, which is totally fine. Again, much like Private Eye, I like that sort of getting the one story chunk and getting
a really
great trade with a beginning, middle, end of an end, and then going up from here. I was surprised. This wasn't on my radar at all, but once I saw Sean Murphy and also Mark Miller now, mm-hmm. and I loved it. I really did.
Yeah. It was good. They both came up really fast. I was expecting both Chrononauts and Invisible Republic to be further away. I was like, they're here. Cool. I wanted to talk about a little more traditional Batman Superman number 20.
Mm-hmm.
This is the end of this Superman's Joker storyline.
Right.
I really liked this. Did you like this?
It was okay.
Okay.
I didn't find myself drawn in very much.
Okay. I was not thrilled so much by the reveal of the villain because I didn't really know who he was. I'm trying to remember his name.
Yeah,
he was from an earlier arc, basically. But it's like one of those things where I really enjoyed the interaction between Batman and Superman.
Yeah, that's the best part.
That was my favorite part of it. I thought that was really interesting. Zadu.
The overall story I didn't really get into. Again, Pac's greatest strength is his character stuff here. But
yeah.
The story was fine. I don't know that Superman needs a Joker. You know, he has his Joker's Lex Luthor.
Yeah, no, I know, but that's not what it was.
But it's just like, I don't think he needs that kind of villain.
But even for just a storyline, I thought that was really interesting. And there was a little bit at the end where, let's see, what was it that, who's the girl? Who's the girl? Who's the short dark haired girl woman? Is that Lois?
Yes. Yes.
It's no, because she has like a battle suit on, and I forgot. And I know that what's her name's in the other one. I just didn't know if she was an alien.
Girl
or something.
Woman.
Okay, so that's Lois. You know what I'm saying? Why is she wearing that suit?
I don't know.
I changed to woman because girl sounded awful.
And girl woman was an improvement.
Lois. So she says, "This is what Victor feels like with the Joker," and he's like, "You take what you can get." I just thought that was really good. Like, what does Superman do now? Maybe he wallows in anger and fear, obsessed with preparing for the next psychopath. Or maybe he steps out in the sunlight. And I was like, that was a really nice little bit of dialogue that sort of describes the difference of them.
Right.
You know, and I don't necessarily consider it completely realistic, and that I'm using that word in the wrong sense, but that's a thing that Batman would actually say to anybody.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's that he's got a circle of friends that he says a little bit more.
Yeah, and I always like that. I think that's the best part about Bruce and Clark as characters interacting with each other is that it's the only time where writers feel the ability to actually open them up at all to other people outside of like grim monologuing.
Right. Which is always nice.
For me, you know, the thing about this book, the other thing is just that where we started out, I really didn't like the Jay Lee stuff and the stuff that followed after it. I wasn't enjoying it at all. And this was a little more, like, I was like, okay, just go a little more Superman, Batman.
So I miss the Jay Lee art tremendously. I think maybe part of the reason why I'm disinterested is I don't really respond to the art all that much.
Okay. Well, there you go. Different people.
Everybody's got their own thing. Everyone has things.
We all make choices. Which that clip is not on the internet. Of Trent. Is it Trent? No. It's Favreau says it.
Yeah. We all.
Mikey. We all make choices.
Superman 39, this is the last issue of Jeff Johns' run on this. If you recall, in 38, Superman got a new suit. He lost his powers for 24 hours, and he revealed his identity to Jimmy Olsen. So he had a lot on his plate as issue 39 opens up. It's funny because also kind of hard to claim your Superman to your best friend if you don't have the powers to back it up when he asks you to fly and stuff. This was a one-shot story called 24 Hours in which we see Jimmy and Clark gallivant around town not having superpowers. And there was a really great couple of great instances of, you know, Clark still being a hero. He catches a kid falling out of a tree, but then scrapes his arm up pretty badly and he's bleeding and really sort of destroys his shirt and jacket. I don't know how he ripped such a giant hole in it, but he did. And then there's a hostage situation that they all hear about at the Daily Planet, because he's officially now back at the Daily Planet because blogging was stupid for him. And they run to it. And it was a great scene where Clark shows up in his costume and walks up to the guy and basically talks him down with the gun pointed at his chest, you know, risking his life because he would have been killed if he'd been shot in the chest. So one of those great what does it mean to be Superman moments is not the powers, but the man. And so it all revolves around that scene. And then at the very end, of course, his powers start to come back. So he's levitating a bit. And then he and Jimmy have a burrito on the top of the Daily Planet building. It was a nice little thing.
That's what I would do every day if I could fly.
It's a nice little ending to the Jeff Johns run on this. And then Gene Luen Yang's arc starts, or his run starts next issue.
Nice. Really?
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. He's not drawing that, obviously.
No, he's writing it. I think Romita's staying on.
Okay.
But this is good. The costume is better. Although I don't think I noticed how sort of shoulder paddy the cape was in the last issue. That part's no good.
That's just line placement.
But it's better, much better.
Are you still reading Outcast?
I am, but somehow I missed it on this week's list.
Okay. It'd been a while. I think they're just coming back from a hiatus or sort of break.
In fact, while you were talking during Batman Superman, I frantically looked up to make sure you weren't wrong about the release date on this. I was like, shit!
I'm not, right?
No, it was this week.
Okay, cool.
I was making sure it wasn't last week.
Well, you know, as a result, when I started it, I was like, what the hell was happening? Because it has been a little while. Basically, at the end of this issue, they sort of the preacher guy and the main guy. I don't know anyone's name in anything anymore. This is just a thing that's gone. Like you sort of get what their mission is gonna be.
At the end of this issue.
Yeah, and I like that. I mean, it's almost like what would happen at the end of a TV pilot. Also, this is going to television, which is not a surprise at all.
Well, I've really liked this. At the same time, it's also a book I tend to fall a few issues behind on, then I read a bunch in a row to catch up.
That's why I asked you if you were still reading, because this seems like the kind of thing that you would just say, I'll just read these trades.
I would, but, you know.
We have a show to do.
And I also really enjoy it. I love the arts. The Paul's a set of arts are wonderful.
Oh, he is so wonderfully minimalistic. Like, he's just letting his lines do the talking, and you know, the colors are filling in the backgrounds, and it's really nice. It's Betty Breitweiser on colors.
Yeah, and, it's a great team. I haven't really liked it. I know people who don't, but I when I read them in a row, I really like the characters. I think the Reverend is a great character.
Yeah.
He's not your typical sort of godly man. He's got his flaws and his faults.
But he cares, like, that he's actually faithful.
Yeah, you know, he actually is, but he also has problems, which is great. And
yeah, well, this is going to get the very beginning of this. You see a lot of that. You get to see the dude's sister go back and meet his, I don't know if it's his ex-wife, but the one who he threatened her and the kids.
His ex-wife, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still married or not, how that works, but there's a scene there which is really interesting because they're talking and she talks about their relationship. There's a lot of really good character work here. It's not so much action, but it sort of sets up what we're going to be doing going forward and where things are. And I guess at the end of this, you know, we don't talk about it so much. This doesn't feel at first glance like a Robert Kirkman book, tonally, I guess, because there's not much spectacle, I guess. That's the kind of thing, because, you know, Invincible and Walking Dead are both sort of like, they build up to these climax spectacle things, and, right. and that's what happens, and you move on to the next thing. But he's really good at coming up with groups of characters and how they interact and how their, you know, feelings towards each other and their relationships push them and pull them towards each other in a way.
It's definitely a strength. I think he takes a lot of flack because he's so successful, but the world building in Walking Dead is wonderful. So is the character building. He's constantly cycling in new characters. I find them all interesting. Invincible is, I mean,
still going.
It's an amazing world he's created and characters he's created there. And I feel the same way about the characters in Outcast so far. There's only a handful of them, but I really like them.
And it's really low key, and you know, it's kind of it's a good book. And here's the end of the whole thing. He doesn't need to do this book.
No.
He could have had this idea and gone directly to network, and one of them would have said, yeah, we'll make a pilot out of it. Like, they would have.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need to do this comic book, but he's doing it,
right.
And he's doing it well. And I think that, regardless of how successful he is, I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So there.
This episode is brought to you by Scribd. Scribd is like Netflix for comics. With a subscription, you'll get access to more than 10,000 comics from Marvel, IDW, Top Shelf, Valiant, Dynamite, Archie, and more. They're the only subscription service that gives you the variety all for one monthly price. On top of that, you'll also get unlimited access to their huge library of ebooks and audiobooks, more than 1 million titles altogether, all available anytime, anywhere. So head over to scribd.com/ifanboy to get started with a free month of access. And even more importantly, Scribd makes sure you can find your way to comics and books you're going to love. They got hundreds of collections curated by their team of editors. And as you read, they'll tailor recommendations for you based on other titles you've loved or not. I assume that's where the infamous rating comes in.
Ratings.
Go to scribd.com/ifanboy right now, and they will set you up with a free month to get started at 30 days of unlimited reading. You'll be supporting this show, so it's a win-win situation. So not a no-win situation.
it's a no-win win situation. They're bad advertisers.
That's scribd.com/ifanboy. And ever since digital comics started, people have always said, well, when is somebody going to do a Netflix-style thing? Well, Scribd has done it. So there you go.
And 30 days, that's not a small thing. That's a good trial.
You can read a lot of comics in 30 days.
Yeah, you can. 30 days is a good trial. I'm like Hulu was like a week, and I was like, nah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when you go to a buffet, and you're like, listen, your free buffet. I'm going to make you regret this. You could do that with your 30-day free trial for Scribd.
You can get a good feeling for that. Yeah. And I guess, I'm guessing, you know, it works like this. The more people that sign up, the more people that go try that, they're going to enable them to get more content.
That's
so,
correct. The more users they have, the more likely they'll get like DC on board. And
so, do you remember like when Netflix streaming started? It was like, there's not much there. You know, well, there is now.
There's still not much there.
I've never run out of stuff.
Well, that's because you like watching documentaries and obscure TV shows. If you want to watch movies, there's nothing there.
I agree with that. I agree with everything you just said to me. I don't go there for the movies. I get the discs for the movies, or I rent them from the Apple TV directly.
All right.
I saw Nightcrawler. That was a very Los Angeles movie.
So I almost fell out of my chair to find that you were still reading Cyclops.
Well, it's good. I told John Layman on the social network, and that guy's got an ego like a house.
Yeah.
I said, you know what? I can't believe I'm still reading this. And I read his first issue after Greg Rucka left the series. Like the fact that I was reading a Cyclops series at all was something. And I thought that Layman really took the reins and made it interesting and fun going forward. I'm still reading it. I'm still enjoying it. I think the handle on the characters is still very good. I don't know that the relationship between the father and the son is quite as specifically crafted, but they are still off having pirating adventures. And there's girl pirates and all sorts.
Girl woman pirates.
Girl woman pirates. No, there's a love triangle twist problem that's happening. And this is issue 11.
Is it the last issue?
Nope, 12 is. Okay. Well, listen, this is me. Yeah, last issue, whatever. No, there's one more issue because I said that, and then he was like, yeah, it's over though. And I was like, sorry, John. But I've really dug it, and it's one of those things like that we get every once in a while where on a sort of unexpected series you get a run of 6 to 12 really sort of fun issues, and that's enough of that kind of thing. Like, I don't want this to go on forever.
Right.
But I've really enjoyed it, and I didn't drop off after Rucka left out like I thought I would. So it's been good, and I think you should read those issues because if you liked it before, you'll still like it.
So if you've been reading the Batman Endgame story in which the Joker has released a virus throughout Gotham and everyone's affected like Joker zombies and been wondering, hey, what's been going on with everybody else in Gotham? Because in their own books, they seem fine. DC is doing a bunch of Endgame one-shots. This was Batgirl Endgame number one in which we see what Batgirl's been up to during this time, and it's written by the regular creative team over at her book of Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher, but drawn by an artist named Bengal, one name like Cher or Madonna.
Like the tiger?
Bengal, yeah. Same way. And I've never heard of this artist, but he or she is awesome.
Are you sure it's not a tiger?
If it's a tiger, even better. And I think DC should have done a better job of promoting that. Drawn by a tiger. You will not believe your eyes.
It's great. I'm sorry.
It has a little bit of an animated manga-esque feel at times, but really wonderful. And the issue itself is a silent issue in which Barbara is trying to rescue a girl trapped on a bus surrounded by a sea of Joker zombies. And really great action, great storytelling. As I was reading this, I was like, who is this artist and where are they going to be next? Because this is really fantastic to look at. And great action sequences, great storytelling through facial expressions. And as Batgirls want to do, lots of use of technology, phones, and texting, and things like that. So really, really fun issue. If you're a fan of the Batgirl comic, and you didn't check this out, because it wasn't part of that run, I would highly recommend it. Written by the same team, total same feel, and a really fun issue. Batgirl in game number one.
I am going to update the folks who are following along with me on Alex and Ada. I don't know that there's many of you, but I get really excited when this comes out. This is one of the, I think it's Joshua Luna's robot love story. And this is the issue where the hammer drops. And you're like, all right, well, now they can be happy. No, everything's gone. Which is exactly what's supposed to happen in drama, and it gets me every time. It's like, oh, can't we just let them be happy for a little while? Can't we just let them play house? I would read that. Nope. Government's coming after them. The characters have gone on the run. And it's just real good robot fiction. It's like, that sort of near future. Here's the robots. They are thinking for themselves. How do we deal with it? Society's scared.
Well, kill them all, obviously.
You're the bad guy in the story now. From a certain point of view.
The robots are thinking for themselves. We're done for.
What if she's really pretty and vaguely Asian? A lot of people are going to like that.
I'm just saying, man. We're toast.
You make sense. I can be honest. This is sort of a conservative liberal thing. Like, I'm like, well, you're talking sense. They're just machines. But we made them like that, Connor.
First we gave them all of our jobs, and then we gave them our sex bot work, and then all of a sudden, nothing else for us to do.
Here's the thing. If the sex bot work is the line, we're fucked. Because people are going to be like, no, we totally shouldn't do that. All right, I'm going to try it once. And that'll be it.
Oh, they're absolutely. Like, 100%. I used to watch those Star Trek Next Generation episodes. I'm sorry, the Deep Space Nine ones where they had the holodeck rooms that were used as sex rooms. Oh. And I was like, no one would ever come out of those rooms.
No one would ever.
One would ever come out.
I mean.
Until their credits ran out.
We've all seen what internet pornography's done.
Oh, boy. Well, speaking of, Red One, number one, is another Image number one issue. Because the Dotsons rolling into the office and they say, hey, you want a number one book? And they said, all right.
They didn't even ask for it. They just came by. They were going to have lunch. All right, so what's your number one going to be about?
So this is the premise of this book is somewhat similar to The Americans. And then they allude to that in the
end. I started watching that this week.
It's good, right?
You were right.
It's fantastic.
I like it a lot.
It's really good. So they allude to this in the back issue essay, which I guess comes with the new series. You also have to write the essay in which they started working this book years ago before it became a thing to have a TV show about Russian spies in the 80s. This is about a Russian superhero spy in the 70s. This is Russia sends over one of their best agents to act as a superhero in America because there's some vigilantes running around with costumes in America, and they figure they can subvert America through this manner. So they send over their tallest, prettiest, most buxom, most badass woman to be a superhero called Red One in America in the 1970s. And this is drawn by the Dotsons, Terry and Rachel, written by Xavier Dorison, who I had to look it up, is French. And I had to look it up is because this was clearly a book written by a European non-English speaker.
Oh, really?
Because it had a lot of idioms that were wrong. Like, there's a beat cop in DC who calls the movies the cinema. And the language was kind of stilted in that way.
And did that make you enjoy it less?
It detracted from it a bit. Mm-hmm. The cinema thing took me right out of it. I was like, wait a second. That's not something anyone would ever
You are
say.
The one who will go to the cinema, yeah?
Exactly. So, but it was fun still.
Everyone was smoking.
I mean, this is 1977 Los Angeles. She goes
three quarters of the book took place at a cafe, which was weird because not a lot of those in LA.
So it's a bit of a throwback in that it's a sort of a cheesecakey a little bit, but it also feels like something Jimmy Palmiotti would write, so it's not completely out of place in modern.
I kind of looked through it and was like, I don't think I'm gonna like that.
Yeah, I don't think you would like this, but I did kind of like the Russian spy aspect of it, so that's why I checked out this issue.
How much baguette would you say was in it?
I give this issue 3 baguettes.
All right. 3 out of 5 baguettes?
3 out of 5 baguettes with brie on it.
Oh.
It's really interesting. I can't really figure out if this is like a satire because it opens up with a movie premiere, but it seems like it's a premiere for a porn film. And then when she visits the movie set on a lot later on, they're shooting a porn, but it's on like a studio lot. So I couldn't figure out if this is some sort of...
That's the French influence again.
If it's supposed to be some sort of cultural satire in America and like the, all the films are porn films or...
Just everything sexy.
Everything's sexier in French. Yeah, I don't understand that.
It's all sexy.
It's a really strong Terry and Rachel Dodson book. I'm trying to figure out how they're doing this and also doing Princess Leia, but or how long they're actually going
to
be doing
this. I forgot to put that on here. It's okay.
It was fun, but not great. I feel like whenever there's a writer who's not English-speaking or from Europe, they need to have an editor who looks over the dialogue. And
But you're kind of a xenophobe. I mean, if we're going to be honest.
Well, I hate everyone that's not American, obviously.
I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But and things like maybe someone should just look over the idioms, you know? Mm-hmm. That's all.
So are you still reading Zero, no, or did you go trade?
I dropped.
Or did you drop off when the alien showed up?
I went to trade, and then I dropped off.
Okay. See, I think that when the alien showed up, they were like, that was dumb, and we're never going to mention again. That's what I'm hoping for anyway, because that's sort of what it feels like. However, if you really like William S. Burroughs, this is the issue for you, because it's basically William S. Burroughs. It is. It's not even basically, because Allen Ginsberg shows up too as he writes a story that has something to do. I don't know, because I couldn't read it and I couldn't finish it.
Yeah, I just that's what ended up happening with me with most of these issues. So
I've hung on a long time and I've really liked all of it, and they all seem to be related, and they're all like you have to give Alesh Kot, I assume he's doing it, credit for putting together a new team. You know, new art. He finds a new interesting artist for almost every issue. Mm-hmm. There aren't that's a monumental production job in addition to just writing it.
Right.
You've got Jordi Belair and Clayton Cowles there to sort of hold it down and keep that consistency, and you know each issue gets written for that artist, it feels like, or at least, you know, it's done in a different style. And this was I was like, oh, we're over the line of a thing. But also, because it's Burroughs, you know, like there's all these, you know, drug nightmare hallucination fantasy things, and at the end, you know, there's a whole thing about Burroughs shot his first wife and he's obsessed with guns and I was so like, I really look forward to this series, and this one I couldn't do it. It was a little like, oh, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, it's only done for a very small amount of people, and I'm glad that they get a chance to do it, but I was like, come on, get on with it.
Yeah, I think I just missed the story that was I don't know, I just fell off of it.
Yeah, I was
really liking it for the first.
It has genuinely been pretty good, and there's, you know, there's been some really wonderful art that's had a lot to do with it. But there's been a through line. There's a story we're following the Zero guy, Edward Zero, I think is his name. You know, like he's been. I don't know what the hell. I couldn't read it. Like it was. I can't read Burroughs, so I can't read Kerouac. I don't get it. It's not my thing.
The only Zero I want to follow is Zero Mostel.
Yeah, Springtime for Hitler.
I really like to make the show as relatable to the kids as possible.
Well, they weren't trying. They weren't going for that with Zero. I mean, I barely know who Burroughs is. I was like, oh, man. All right, let's do it.
Well, there are a bunch of trades out for it.
That's true. Where could one get those, he asks himself, knowing that he will answer. You could head over to ifanboy.com/Amazon to purchase hard goods. And in doing so, by using that link, a portion of your purchase will go to support the program you are listening to and the upkeep of our vast archive of materials.
Also, digital goods there, my friend.
I know. That's actually true. I wanted to use the word hard goods, is what it was.
I gotcha.
I buy my music from Amazon because they went to MP3 first.
Yes, I do as well.
And it drops it automatically into the iTunes, so it's all good. And we need these sometimes to use these songs on the show, so I need them to be MP3.
Yes.
So if you do that, that's a really easy way to support the site. Just make the Amazon link on there your shortcut, but you're helping us without even knowing it, which is really helpful. If you would like to be even more direct, if you would like to take part directly and send a little something our way, there is ifanboy.com/registration for $3 a month or $30 a year. You can contribute directly to the costs of the show and the stuff we do, and it's just a way for the audience to say we really appreciate what you guys are doing and we want you to keep doing it. So here's a little something to help do that. Or you can donate anything that you would like. There are costs associated with it, and also it's a really good gauge that people are still engaged, and obviously we appreciate it so much. So that's how you do that, and thank you to everybody who is contributing in any way that they can.
Exactly. Let us do some audience questions. Let's try Andrew, who says, had this one basic idea. If Robert Kirkman was attached to a book from the Big Two, which would you like it to be? P.S. If possible, what artist would you like to see accompany Kirkman on the book?
Okay, so what's the first thing you thought when you read this?
Well, my first thought was Andrew, In the realm of fantasy, anything is possible. We can certainly come up with the artist for this fantasy book.
Yes, but I mean, the thing I thought was, this happened.
Yeah, he did a lot of books for the Big Two.
And now I realize that time has actually moved on, and you, sometimes you think of a person as they were, and realize that if somebody came along to comics in the last 10 years, mm-hmm. 10 years, they're not going to know that that was like Kirkman. Kirkman was the guy who was following the path where he did his own book, and then said, right, now I can do work at Marvel, where I've always wanted to, because I wanted to write Spider-Man. And he did. He was at Marvel, and he did a bunch of stuff, and he thought, I don't want to work at Marvel anymore. I'm just going to do my own thing. And in doing so, changed the way that comics exist today.
Changed the game.
He did. He was absolutely right. This is and I wonder if this counts as history now, in that he came up with a manifesto. He said, you know, we should work for ourselves. We should do the thing. And a lot of people followed suit, and now Image looks like it does. But he was at Marvel.
He did five issues of Captain America. He did an issue of Daredevil. He did a couple of Civil War tie-ins.
Irredeemable Ant-Man. He did
Hulk.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff there.
He did a whole Marvel team-up book, didn't he?
Marvel team-up. That's right. And he had like the Ring.
He did 25 issues of Marvel team-up, which was his book, a book specifically for him as the hot indie creator. He did, of course, Marvel Zombies, since he was the hot indie creator with the
He was
hot,
on Ultimate
the hot
X-Men
zombie
for a
book.
While?
He did. Yeah, he was one of the writers that couldn't make Ultimate X-Men work. X-Men books, X-Force. I mean, he did a lot of Marvel work. You think of a Marvel character, he's probably written them. The Punisher.
Yeah, so for me, it's difficult to answer this question, and I'm not trying to be evasive.
Unless you want to put him on a DC character, because he doesn't look like he's done any DC work.
Yeah, I know, but like to me, he epitomizes the guy who decided not to do that.
Right.
Is my point. Like he loves that stuff, and he walked away from it. So to sort of fantasize putting him on a Big Two book, it's really interesting. Like I have a hard time answering. Was there a DC thing that you thought he would be good for? His best work, by the way, has always been his own stuff.
Yeah, I didn't love almost any of that stuff that he did. I enjoyed the team up book because it was kind of wacky and weird, and he had a lot of indie artists, or was that Bennett?
Yeah, they had great artists all throughout that, and he definitely brought his own flavor to it, and I thought that that's where he shined the most.
I don't know. I mean,
it's a hard question, honestly, because then the other thing, you know, he brought his own artists, and he's definitely got his own style.
I can see him doing like Doom Patrol, but that's sort of the default sort of indie creator book anyway, because they're so weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I feel like he did, if you read Marvel Zombies, like he actually could write all those characters really well, but he could also sort of take the piss with them a lot. Mm-hmm. He was good at that. It was almost like, and I don't think that these writers are similar, but it was almost like every once in a while Garth Ennis would do like a Superman or something like that.
Right.
And it was really interesting and funny, but you wouldn't want it all the time.
No.
And that's how I was with Kirkman on that stuff. Like you'd like, oh, his take on it was kind of cool, but I don't want an ongoing of that.
Yeah. All right, Andrew, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess we kind of sidestepped that one, but I thought it was really interesting to look at in the context of sort of the history of that creator.
Let's read two emails back-to-back because they're on the same subject. Troy writes and says, this past week I added the upcoming Secret Wars series event to my pull list. I did this out of nostalgia for the past, which is probably a bad reason, but there it is. I started reading comics through the G.I. Joe as a kid in the 80s, but it was Secret Wars 2 in 1985 that pulled me into superhero comics. I went on from this to track down the original Secret Wars series, which I really loved. I still have a special place in my heart for the first Secret Wars because this first introduced me to the idea of continuity and the shared timeline of the Marvel Universe. I was in the fifth or sixth grade at the time. Through this, I started reading Avengers, X-Men, and other titles. Thus, when this new Secret Wars was announced, I had to give it a shot. When one of my buddies got married a few years back, I included a set of the original Secret Wars as his wedding gift because he and I spent so much time reading them and talking about them. I've been listening to the podcast for a couple of years now, and I really enjoy it. I've not heard you discuss the original Secret Wars, so I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. I would also be curious to hear what you think about the upcoming series. I embrace myself for disappointment, but I'm hoping for coolness. Justin writes, what the fuck is Marvel doing? Everyone is reading the solicits and is extremely confused. I've been doing some digging, and I know what tie-ins are related to each monthly book, but this is a lot. Are we expected to buy all of these? The irony of beginning a new volume of Star Wars is Marvel owns the right to say, I have a bad feeling about this, which would be the subtitle for Secret Wars. So...
To be young again.
It was really funny because these two emails literally came in back to back.
Yeah, yeah.
So I read one of them, and then I read this. I read Troy's, and then I read Justin's, and then I laughed because it was such a funny tonal shift. But first of all, I really like Troy's wedding gift to his friend. Mm-hmm. I think if they really bonded over that series as kids, then that's really cool to present that to him as a a wedding gift, the original issues. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Also, Secret Wars. I can't believe he came into Secret Wars 2, which is among the worst comics ever made. Do you remember?
Well, yeah, no, because I never read any of that stuff.
Well, you've cut me off. We did a video about those.
Yeah.
The Augie DeBlick, Jim Rutkowski video, the infamous mini we did on Secret Wars 2. So in putting that video together, I had to read through those old books to find the proper art. And it's just incomprehensible mess.
It's shooter unhinged.
Completely. Secret Wars, the first one, I really like. I have the omnibus. I reread it.
It's gorgeous.
In fact, yeah, the Mike Zeck art for the most part. Fun fact, reading it in my bed at 2 in the morning once, the omnibus led me to start the Great Moments of Comics History feature on the website because that was a panel of Iron Man catching Captain Marvel and saying something about never dropping that kind of talent. And I immediately got out of bed, scanned that panel, and set it to go live on the website the next day. That was the start of that whole series because of that book. But I really like that as a time capsule, as a look at those characters. I still think the story is pretty fantastic and fun. The art's wonderful. And it really was one of the first times you had that universe spanning all the characters together story. And it really it happened before, but this was really one of the first major things where it tied into all the books. And there was a toy line. The toy line came first.
How we got into those comics, by the way.
Yeah.
Because they were the toys that didn't move and had those stupid shields. But they were the best thing we'd ever had.
Lenticular shields. Oh, my God. Are you kidding? When those toys came out along with the superpowers ones, it was like every prayer I had as a kid was answered.
Yep.
Even though their hands, arms.
Little did you know that you would literally be buried by a glut of thousands of them.
So I have nothing but good memories of Secret Wars. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that as a kid.
It's just before. It was literally just before my time, and it wasn't a thing that I ever had to go back to read. I got the toys and everything, but I wasn't reading comics then.
Right.
And then the other way to look at it is the other one, which is, I don't know. I have a hard time. If you don't want to read it, don't. I guess. I don't have a problem backing up from Marvel if I'm not digging what they're doing. But I mean, I would say to you to do what I do. In
you're talking to Justin now.
I'm talking to Justin. The other guy, he's saying, hey, I'll hope for the best, whatever. But actually, this applies to both of them. Read the first one. If you like it, it's going to be available. They're going to order a lot of them. Read the first one. If you like it, read more. And then, you know, the same thing that you can always do. Marvel's smart. They're not going to put out a thing where you literally have to read everything. They're going to make it seem like you do, but you can follow the things that you want to, and you can pick up the threads on the other stuff that you want to, or follow the creator or the character or whichever. And if not, then you save yourself a little money over time, get some back catalog stuff, and read something you really enjoy instead.
Yeah, well, the tough thing about Secret Wars, the end of Convergence or whatever DC's called, which is the same exact story, is that they're both taking over the entire lines.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're a comic fan and you're into this stuff, and then both those stories are stopping. Well, I guess they're not stopping because Marvel's is leading into this, which is changing everything, and DC's is. Whatever.
But that's the world we live in now. Yeah. I mean, this is the way of things. It's going to happen now. It's going to happen every 2, 3, 4 years. This is the current business model. This is the deal. And what I'm saying is, if you don't want to do it, totally cool. If you don't buy stuff, they'll learn. Oh, this doesn't work. There's always comics to read. There's so many comics. Mm-hmm. If, you know, you go back and lots of people are like, oh, I'd really like to go back. Go back and read stuff you really love. Like, you don't have to be at a loss for comics. You could just not do this thing. And if it makes you angry, then definitely don't worry about it. Read something else.
Yeah, if it makes you angry, don't read it angry. Just don't read it.
Yeah.
Reading it they don't care if you read it happy or angry as long as you read it.
Rangry.
It's honestly, it's the same effect for them.
Yes,
it
is.
Same $3 into the store's pocket and then however many dollars into the company's pocket.
Yeah. A purchase is a yes vote.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, vote that way. And I know that there's all sorts of intricacies in how the direct market works and blah, blah, blah and all that. But, you know, there's nothing to be mad about, man. It's fine. And you know what? I don't know what they're doing because I haven't. I guess it's that everybody's reading this list. I'm not. I haven't read. I don't, you know. The week that it comes out, I'm going to look at it. I'm going to judge it when I read it. And then I'll decide if I want to keep going. You should probably do the same thing. That's what I would suggest.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS-326-2697. I think this is the first time I realized there's 2626 back-to-back.
Hmm.
326-2697.
That is fascinating broadcasting, Connor.
Tell us who you are, where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds. That's how you get to be part of the show. And so now we can talk about our big WonderCon announcement. The news broke earlier this week. We posted it on our website and our social media. You might have seen it there. But in case you haven't, we'll be at WonderCon on Sunday, April 5th at 12:30. We will be hosting the Spotlight and Darwin Cook panel in room 213. And the big news is that it's an iFanboy reunion because Ron Richards will be joining us on the dais. It'll be me and Josh and Ron hosting something together. In fact, it will be me and Josh and Ron in the same room together for the first time in almost 3 years.
Is that really true?
Yeah.
Hey.
I was talking to Ron about it the other day. We couldn't figure out when the last time we were all in the same room together. We think it was San Diego 2012.
Yeah, that's probably about right. I mean, like, I have seen both of you separately
a
lot.
We see each other all separately. I just saw you, and I saw before that, I just saw Ron.
Yeah. And we talk all the time, but our relationships have been largely virtual for a long time, so it's hard to say.
So come by WonderCon Sunday the 5th, room 213 at 12:30. Hey, you can see us awkwardly in the same room together for the first time, although we'll see each other the day before.
It's not, still. I don't think it will be awkward.
No. And then you can come see us talk to Darwin Cook, and Darwin Cook will most likely make fun of us, especially Ron.
Well, I want to go ahead and I feel like we should give credit. Like, Darwin's the one who made this happen.
That's true. Darwin Cook, he had a Spotlight panel booked, and he said, I want the iFanboys to host it, and I want the original three. And we said, all right.
I don't know that I've ever received a more flattering compliment in our time doing this. And I want to put that out there, because regardless of the fact that we're going to do this and that's going to be fun, and I am super looking forward to it. I mean, I think we hold Darwin's work in such remarkable esteem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, who's the premier cartoonist in comics right now? Who's the best guy? And I'm going to say Darwin every time.
Yep.
So to have, you know, that guy be the, want us to come do that thing, and it'll be totally fun. You know, that's so cool. I'm really excited about that, and I'm very proud of it.
Please come out. It'll be fun to see Darwin fans there and our fans and be confused about each other and what everyone's doing here. So 12:30, the Sunday the 5th, WonderCon, room 213, the Spotlight and Darwin Cook panel will be there. And come by and say hi. It'll be fun. I don't know what we're going to do yet, but...
I can tell you one thing. I'm going to be on the road for a while, and I do not have enough clothes for that. So I might be... Who's the hobo standing next to the sideburn guy?
Oh, that's... Well, you know...
That's Josh.
You can do laundry in my place if we want to do that.
Wow. Crazy.
Check it out, WonderCon. The information is all on our website, too. There's a post there which includes all of the video interviews we've done with Darwin, which are fun. So you can get a sense of what the tone will be.
Yeah.
We're all slightly scared of him, so it's always...
He's...
It's always going to be slightly intimidating.
He's not a lightweight.
It'll be
fun. That's
what
I'm saying.
It'll be fun. Check that out at ifanboy.com. Also, go to ifanboy.com and comment about this show, talk about this week's books, talk about books we didn't get to talk about or books we did get to talk about. All of our other podcasts are there. And you can follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan and at C.S. Kilpatrick.
If you like us, the show, what we do, you could feel free to write a review on iTunes, or you could share the good news about the program with your friends and associates, both on the internet and real life. Let us know how we're doing like that. And if you like a show or something was good or something is relevant to somebody's interest from our vast back catalog of content, that stuff's all still there for your enjoyment. I just watched an interview that I did with Garth Ennis in a long time ago.
I remember prepping for that interview.
You gave me a great opening line, which was hands down the best part of the entire thing.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, yeah. I watched it with, I was like, I'm really afraid to watch this. And right at first, I was like, oh, we were bad at this. But then I was like, you know what? I was happy with it. It was pretty good. But there's a 2 minute ad in the beginning.
Oh, forget that.
Show's 16 minutes. We got a 2 minute ad in the beginning of like Gordon doing a skit. And that was a mistake. Now, the other problem is that we didn't know how to title things. We just called it Boys because it was about boys. So I couldn't find it. I was like, Connor, I can't find our show. Where is it? He had to show me. We lived and learned. What do you
want? Oh, boy. Yeah, that was early. That was the first year.
So young.
That was the first year of the show. So we were still a little green.
Yeah.
So anyway, where are we in the script?
We're at the end. We're done. Oh. Thank you.
That's it for this week's show. We'll be back next week with more comics talk. And
you're supposed to get better at this.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't.
What are we doing?
I no longer was looking at the script. I was looking at the revisions of the website to find the episode.
Oh, you were distracted.
Yeah,
you got something. Here's the thing. Had a guy who used to not pay attention, and look what happened to him.
The thing about he went up. Well, we stayed the same. The thing about the three-man show versus the two-man show is I could always just zone out whenever you and Paul were talking about a book I didn't have any interest in.
Uh-huh.
And I always knew that if I zoned out, someone would pick up the slack.
Can I tell you how useful that is in work conference calls? That skill? Yeah, if I look right. You can't put that on a resume,
no.
But that is invaluable. What I'm saying.
Well, next week we'll have some more work tips for everybody. Until then, I'm Connor.
Josh, that was fun.
See you next week.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.